chapter 3, the third chapter, verse 1, "Therefore, holy brethren, partakers of a heavenly calling, consider Jesus the apostle and high priest of our confession." Wow. Mm-hmm. "He was faithful to him who appointed him, as Moses was also in all his house. For he has been counted worthy of more glory than Moses, by just so much as the builder of the house has more honor than the house. For every house is built by someone, but the builder of all things is God. Now Moses was faithful in all his house as a servant, for a testimony of those things which were to be spoken later. But Christ was faithful as a son over his house, mm-hmm. whose house we are, if we hold fast our confidence and the boast of our hope firm until the end." Mm-hmm. So wow, what are we seeing here then? He's telling us we are partakers yes. of a heavenly mm-hmm. calling. Mm-hmm. And as we do that, think about Jesus. Mm-hmm. Consider Jesus. Mm-hmm. And he calls him an apostle. He's the apostle. We yeah. don't think of that, do we?
No. Is God an apostle? I don't think so.
I don't think God is an apostle.
Jesus is also the prophet. Yeah. So he's a prophet. He's also the apostle. Mm-hmm. And the Son of God.
So Jesus is the apostle, mm-hmm. and he is the high priest.
Wow. Another human title.
Of our confession. So I think that's yes. that's great.
Yes. The heavenly word there gets people off track sometimes. The heavenly calling is not you go to heaven when you die. Because we're looking, as it says later in the book, it's actually chapter 13, verse 14.
Yes.
Later in the same book. We do not have a lasting city, but we are looking and seeking the city which is to come.
Yes.
It's coming to us. We're not going there.
That Jesus as apostle
mm-hmm.
and
high priest.
And as high priest, mm-hmm. He was faithful to mm-hmm. him who appointed mm-hmm. him. So that was God who appointed him.
Wonderful.
Even like Moses was also faithful in his house. So, mm-hmm. so Jesus, I think this is interesting, by the way, I have at times some of our young people in studying the Bible. I brought up this bit of a trick question: who is your favorite apostle? And it's surprising you get all these names yes. of everybody,
yeah, exactly.
but maybe didn't consider that no, maybe your favorite apostle would be Jesus.
Isn't that interesting?
It's interesting.
It's a good question.
But here it is in our Bible.
It's
he
excellent.
Is the apostle.
Who's your favorite prophet, you might
say. Yeah, I might say that too. Yes,
it might not say Jesus.
That's right.
This is the extent to which we've been drugged away. Mm. Drugged in the sure. I don't mean dragged away, but I mean literally yeah. drugged on the idea yeah. that Jesus isn't quite human.
No, he's
not really a prophet. Not
we
really
don't want him to be one no. of us. And in reality, he had to be
he
one.
He has
of
to be to make the story coherent.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
mm-hmm. So in verse 3, then, he's been counted mm. worthy mm. of more glory than Moses. Mm-hmm. And Moses mm-hmm. was had a great deal of glory, I think, from God. And
isn't that
and all
striking?
That.
Yes, exactly.
By just so much as the builder of the mm. house has more honor than the house.
Yes, that's interesting. So Jesus is here, I think, the builder of his house, because it speaks of Jesus' house. It's God's house as well, of course.
Yes, of course.
But Jesus working under God, we can say it's his house. And then wouldn't this be then the next ranking? You stressed the fact, rightly in chapter 1, that he's superior to angels.
Mm.
Now guess what? He's superior to the Aaronic high priest and also to Moses.
Moses himself, that's right.
Jews find that very hard.
Yeah.
Who can be better than Moses?
Better than
well,
Moses.
This Messiah can be.
He is, indeed. Well, and I suppose then mm-hmm. our Jewish folks of mm-hmm. that day probably struggle with that same issue.
So.
How can Jesus be, you yeah. know, greater than right. greater than Moses?
Isn't that a
say?
Powerful lesson? We yeah. move beyond yeah. the law of Moses, even then.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
Torah in the letter
yeah.
is not the ultimate thing.
Yes.
It's the Torah
yes.
in the Spirit, obedience to Jesus in the New Covenant, that is so key.
Wow. So Christ is different from Moses in this sense. Mm-hmm. Christ literally created a new
mm-hmm.
people,
mm-hmm.
something that didn't exist before.
That's right.
And this new people, mm-hmm. he says in verse 6, but Christ was faithful as a son over his house,
mm-hmm.
whose house we mm-hmm. are.
Mm-hmm.
We are that house.
Mm-hmm.
We are the people that was created by Jesus Christ. So Jesus has created a house. He's a greater builder than Moses was.
Yes.
And what he has created has eternal ramifications.
Mm-hmm.
These are a people mm-hmm. that are brought to immortality.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is something that Moses couldn't
that's
do.
Right. That's right.
That's wonderful.
Exactly
and of course, the one who's over everything, Moses, Jesus, mm-hmm. the house, everything is God. He's the ultimate creator, of course.
That's right.
But Jesus is unique in comparison to Moses.
Yes.
Because Jesus brought forth a people.
That's
and
right.
Moses didn't do
that. No, that's excellent, yes. The law of Moses is a kind of interim. The Abrahamic thing is solid basis.
Yes, yes.
Then we have this parenthesis of the law of Moses. We've now moved beyond that to the law of Messiah, which is not the same as the law of Moses. That's where people go wrong. We have one of the ifs, the conditional.
Oh, another eon.
Right? Another
eon.
Yes. So Christ, as you said, is faithful as a son over his house. Whose house? We are. We're the house of Christ then, as well as being ultimately the house of God. I see that.
Surely.
If, though, if we hold fast our confidence, that hold fast is a gospel word in Luke. Those who get the gospel and hold it fast.
Yes,
it's very much reminiscent of that. But if, on condition that we hold fast our confidence and the boast of our hope, I like this. You know, we're almost reckless boasting. Mm. We're hoping to fix the world with Jesus.
Yes.
We should be confident.
Yes, yes.
And in fact, that's a condition of salvation. Mm. And we've got to hold on to this to the end. That's not once saved, always saved.
No.
It's Romans 11:22, where Paul says, if you Christians remain faithful, you're doing good. If you don't, you Christians will be cut off.
Yes, wow.
I've seen that open some eyes
in
a very alarming and direct way when it's read to them. That's staggering.
It would be interesting, and I haven't done it, but to go through the book of Hebrews and notice all of the ifs. And those things are very important. We don't want to misunderstand this matter.
No.
If indeed these exhortations to give ourselves and our hearts and our attention to this salvation, and if we don't, that we might wane away from it, walk away from it, and then we would be held greatly responsible for God, before God.
Oh, yes.
We need to know that. We want to know that.
So
that we can have that perspective, I think.
Can we say the book is a warning? It's a very strong one. It's an encouragement.
Yeah.
Please do well.
Yeah.
But I'm warning you, if you don't get this right, you're in dire trouble. We see that in the 6th and the 10th chapters. The strongest possible text against the Calvinistic idea that the saved are automatically saved.
Yes.
Doesn't matter. It's just not true of Hebrews chapter 6 and Hebrews 10. And all of the if, the and statements that you mentioned here.
Indeed. Verse 7. Therefore, just as the Holy Spirit says, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as when they provoked me, as in the day of trial in the wilderness, where your fathers tried me by testing me and saw my works for 40 years. Therefore, I was angry with this generation and said, they always go astray in their heart, and they did not know my ways. As I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. My goodness. That's very powerful, isn't it?
And then the next words in verse 12, take care, brethren.
Wow.
Watch out. You don't say that to people whose salvation is guaranteed, doesn't matter what they do.
That's
just not clear.
And neither are you going to say that to the people who are on the outside of
salvation. No.
His concern is the people who are partakers of this salvation.
Exactly.
Wow.
It's very striking, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah. So, anyway, his example then is those who rebelled, those who hardened their hearts in the wilderness.
Oh, wow.
And his point is, they tried God, they tested God. He was angry with them as a result of that. And so he winds up, they shall not enter into my rest. So isn't that amazing?
It's very striking, especially where Paul says, let me warn you, I'm going to warn you double time here. Those who commit adultery on an ongoing basis, commit fornication, unrepentant, get drunk, unrepentant, they will not be in the kingdom. Now, they're obviously believers. They're within Paul's jurisdiction.
Right.
But there's a very tough side to the Bible, isn't there?
Yes.
That we need not to underemphasize.
And we've got to hold all of that in balance, don't you think?
Oh, I do. Yeah. I think.
Otherwise, we're not going to have the same mind and heart that the writer of Hebrews had and wanted his
readers. We're not hearing the warning. We're disregarding the warning.
Yeah.
We've been warned here.
Yeah. Verse 12.
Yep. Take care.
Take care, brethren, that there not be in any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart that falls away from the living God. 13, but encourage one another day after day, as long as it is still called today, so that none of you will be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. Wow, I think that's interesting. Deceitfulness. Sin is deceitful. It's deceitful in that it seems like you're getting something through sin that you might have wanted or desired, but actually it's going to overthrow you, your faith, your hope, and wow. For we have become partakers of Christ if we hold fast the beginning of our assurance firm until the end.
Wow, there's that if again.
Wow, yes.
Isn't that striking?
Verse 15, while it is said today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as when they provoked me. For who provoked him when they had heard? Indeed, did not all those who came out of Egypt, led by Moses? Wow. And Moses here is the prototype of Christ, would you think?
Oh, very much. Exactly.
So those who then rebelled and hardened their hearts in Moses' day, he's going to compare to those who now are led out by Christ and who hardened their hearts.
Absolutely.
Or would turn back, as it were, from Christ.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Verse
17, and with whom was he angry for 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose bodies fell in the wilderness? Verse 18, and to whom did he swear that they would not enter his rest, but to those who were disobedient? It's not to those who didn't come from Egypt that he's concerned about, or somebody who stayed back in Egypt. Those who come on out, who are following Moses, they're the ones who wind up not entering his rest because of their disobedience and their unbelief. But now he's saying all of this has meaning and overtones for us who are followers of Christ.
It's a warning and an example for us, isn't it? And you made the point there that unbelieving heart in verse 12 is exactly equivalent to disobedience. And what combines that idea so well is the phrase in Paul, the obedience of faith, because people argue endlessly, well, what's faith and what's works? Not that heart. Abraham obeyed God. Abraham believed God. It's the same thing.
Right.
You're supposed to believe what God said and you're supposed to do it. I mean, is that sad?
It's a package deal.
That's but the argumentation over works and
splitting hairs. It doesn't help anything. Then in that same sense of unbelief, we see in verse 19, and this is the end of this particular chapter as we have it. So we see that they were not able to enter because of unbelief, which he has just equated with disobedience.
Isn't that good?
And it's amazing.
I think we could go on stressing that for the rest of our careers because it's so easy. John 3:36, he who believes in the Son has life. He who refuses to obey the Son doesn't have one.
Okay.
Can you imagine a parent saying to a child, and the child says, well, I don't know, what are you telling me to do? Am I supposed to believe you or obey you? What is this? It's not a problem until we take it into theology. Then it founds all these denominations arguing with each other. What a tragedy.
That's right.
The Bible was meant for ordinary folk, you know, with clear understanding of simple words.
Well, you know, as I'm reading this third chapter, and in light of what we've seen in the first and second chapters, the writer of Hebrews is really driving home some important matters for the Christians that he's speaking to. He never says, I'm addressing non-Christians now.
He never says, now this is
to the non-Christian or to the unbeliever. He's talking all the way through here. When he says in verse 6, whose house we are. We are the house of Christ. We're the house he has built and is still building.
Absolutely.
Remember, Jesus says, upon this rock I will build my church, my congregation. So we are a part of that. The people he's talking with are a part of that house. So if we will hold fast, then take hold of, but hold fast to, our confidence and boast of our hope firm until the end. In other words, don't give up on Christ, you know. I think it's a mistake, I think, and you may have a thought about this, but I think it's a mistake for Christians to get up every morning worried and concerned that maybe I'm lost today, or this is I'm out of hope, or I don't think that's the way that God wants us to live. I don't think that's the way Messiah wants us to think. we do have a confidence in the love of God and the love of Christ, and we are his people, and we are the house he's built. But that doesn't mean we should neglect this salvation and neglect the fact that if we neglect it, there are ramifications that are most also very serious.
You virtually quoted that first chapter again. If we neglect so great a salvation, which was first announced as the kingdom of God gospel by Jesus, and then was attested to by those who heard it, it's very clear. Again, it's not difficult. The idea, the principle is very straightforward here.
If we're really going to be followers of Jesus Christ, as the writer of Hebrews sees it, we're going to be keenly concerned about our obedience to him, and we're going to recognize there is such a thing as us neglecting this great salvation.
Certainly.
Not disregarding it as unbelievers, but as believers neglecting it. And I think that's very important.
It's not clear in popular Christianity. I mean, I just don't hear that preached at all. In fact, I hear it condemned sometimes. What they're trying to do is to bolster their own confidence falsely. They're trying to say, don't worry about anything.
That's right.
You've been saying, well, no matter what you do, you could rob a bank every day of the week for the rest of your and you still go to heaven, is their language.
Just come to church and put in the offering, and it won't matter. Or maybe you don't even have to do that.
It's a very cheap way of doing this mighty materialism, this marvelously intense and thorough material.
I'm not getting any of that out of what this writer's saying. That's not the sense of this.
It isn't.
We've got to get on the same page with this fellow.
Sure.
And regardless of what people may say or think.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Beautiful chapter, then, I think.
Oh, it's rich.
It's great stuff.
It's good stuff.
But yet, very, very serious.
Very serious. Very serious. It is. It's a wonderful balance, isn't it? I mean, getting the balance is the key. We shouldn't be overconfident. We should be ready to be rebuked. We should be listening.
Yeah.
God might send somebody along to us to challenge us.
Yeah, surely.
On the other hand, how can you sell a product if you don't believe in it?
Sure.
If we're supposed to evangelize the world and we are half-hearted about our own belief,
sure,
that doesn't get us anywhere.
That's right.